All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez. Happy 4th of July. We are coming to you, not live, obviously, but I'm coming to you. We are coming to you, I should say, on 4th of July. So hopefully you're enjoying your barbecue. Hopefully you are enjoying the fireworks. Please don't have a JPP episode. Please keep all your fingers. Please keep everything intact. Do it safely and soundly. But I say we because today I have the distinct pleasure and honor of having someone on the podcast that I've been wanting to have on for a long time. You specifically heard his name on one episode prolifically back in the day. And as I introduce him, I'll tell you why. But this is the man who predicted that the Detroit Lions would win the NFC North. Actually, you know, that didn't happen, but I got on him for that. And that's kind of how we kind of came to know each other. But I also got to give him his flowers, and because I told him I would, because he deserves them right now. I'm also got to introduce him this way. This is the man who picked the Golden State Warriors to win the championship before the season started in 7 games. But I'll give him this credit too. When the final started, he picked the Warriors in 6 over the Boston Celtics. All right. So we all make bad picks. He made one, but we all make great picks. And he made one, definitely. And that is my guy, Brandon Myers. What's going on, brother? How are you? Thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah, man. It's a privilege to be on here with you. I'm honored to have both the good and bad, you know, being introduced. But, I mean, next time we can start with the good and kind of forget the bad. But
nah,
anyway.
I wanted people to remember the ending, like, you know, the ending of the intro. So I wanted the good to be last, you know?
Yep.
You know how the news media works, right? You hook people on with the bad news first, like the big negative story.
Yep.
That's the first thing you see on your morning news television, like the big bad story, and then that's how people stay on, and then all of a sudden, oh, let's give you some good news. So yeah, I wanted to give the good news second. So yeah, that was the good news, man. You picked that series went exactly how you thought it was gonna go. Losing in Boston.
Yeah, I need to stick with basketball predictions, right, or football predictions at the moment, even though I like football more.
Because you had a great basketball prediction in the bubble, right?
I did. That I had nobody saw the coming. Heat beating the Bucks.
You had the Heat beating the Bucks, right? Nobody saw that coming.
Nope.
You're the only one that saw that coming. But I got to put a qualifier on that because you are a homer. You're a Miami Heat homer, right?
Correct.
But even though you're a Miami Heat homer, you follow this team really closely, so there's a lot of things that you see that other people don't see. You know, they're watching from the outside, so there's not a big Heat following outside of Miami. There's not even a big Heat following in Miami, which is the sad part at times, until the playoffs start.
They were even saying in the playoffs this year, they didn't really have, like, packed out stands until the series with the Celtics, or even the series against the Sixers. Like, no one really, they weren't even packed out for the first round of the playoffs. So it's more like old people that want to go down to Florida and chill.
Yeah.
Not really watch basketball.
No, that's true, because I'm, you know, me and my wife, right, we're, you know, in the process of just trying to get things in the right position. And then we're like, hey, if we get things in the right position and God grants us, like, we want to go down there too. Like, we want to go down to Florida too. But you got to get things in the right position first.
It's true.
You know, so I think that a lot of people go down to Florida, you know, and whatnot, to say, all right, everything's locked in. You know, we're good to go. But now we want to enjoy the weather and, you know, everything that the state has to offer. You know, no state tax. You know, all the attractions and all that, you know, so your ducks are lined in a row, money's good, jobs are right, everything is like that, you know, kids are where they need to be, and then it's like, all right, we need to enjoy the weather and the sights. You know, because up here in the north, northeast. Yep. Whew, these winters are brutal, man.
But that's why, I mean, you have what are they? The winter birds, or they're called. But everybody goes down to Florida during the winter because it's so nice. And then in the summer, it's blazing hot, so everybody comes up north.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now, I think my parents said it was like hot, like mid 90s, almost hitting. Feeling like 100, but that humidity down there, that's brutal. It hits you.
They're not in Miami though, right?
No, they're about 3 hours north.
Oh, okay, all right, cool. All right, man. There's a couple of things I forgot to let everyone know. Brandon is the co-host of Coming Off the Bench podcast. I'm an avid listener. You guys know that because I said that in the last episode when Sean Adams was here. And he explained how the podcast came together, so I'm not going to ask you all of that. But, you know, check it out. Coming Off the Bench, I definitely highly recommend it. When it comes to you want to dig into some second spectrum stats and all that, Brandon is the guy to go to. Sometimes I listen to the pod and I be like, that is great. I think that the greatest stat that you pulled out, and you're a stat geek, right? In a different way than Sean. Like you'll...
I like the interesting stats. Like the ones that you're like, wait, what?
Yes, like exactly.
Those are the ones that...
Absolutely. That's what I take away when I hear you. That it's like, what? Hold up. And the one that got me the most was the quarterbacks and the money. The Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. And the percentage that they took up, I never knew that. Like, you go into some real intricate stuff. Like, Sean knows his stuff, like, you know, we're talking about points per game or yards per game or things like that. Sean will know those kind of metrics, right? Rebounds, assists, you know, rushing yards and, you know, all this. But there are some ones that you pull out that are what in the world? Like, really? You know? And those are the ones that I love, man. That since day one listening to your pod, I'm like, I like that dude, you know, because he pulls out the what the heck stat. Like, who would have thought that?
Ooh, you know, that's a good one. That's a good segment right there.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, that stat really floored me. So, you know, but before we get kicking off here, people are gonna say, what is that stat? Because maybe they didn't hear your pod on that. But what the heck was that stat? When we're talking about the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks and the money.
Yeah, there was a percentage in there saying that, so these quarterbacks are getting an insane amount of money.
All right.
And the contracts are huge. And so, for example, the Chiefs, I think the cap right now is $208 million for the teams.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a quarterback where Patrick Mahomes is getting $50 million, he is 1/4 already pretty much of your cap, and that's one player, and you still have to pay
52 other guys.
Correct. Like, yeah, exactly. So where, like, there's going to be a lot of bottom feeder players, but your quarterback, like, I understand he throws the ball, he can throw it, but all your skill positions, they're the ones that, I mean, score the touchdowns. They're the ones that score the touchdowns and whatnot. So, like, so that was pretty much just saying quarterbacks that are being really highly paid are not winning Super Bowls. The last one that did it, I believe it was Peyton Manning, and he only had like 20-ish percent of the, maybe it was 20%, but that's still kind of high. So basically, yeah, it's like basically paying your skilled players, your in the trenches guys. Quarterbacks that are being highly paid are not winning Super Bowls because there's more than just you on the field.
Right, so I think the stat was something like, was it around 15 or 12% is the average or something like that?
Something like that, yep.
That Super Bowl winning quarterbacks getting paid average, right? Like normally, right?
Oh, yeah.
So,
and Tom Brady isn't the highest paid player on his team at all, ever. I mean, and they're winning Super Bowls. Like all their money is going to other positions. And like when the Eagles won, Nick Foles. I mean, obviously he was backup. Carson Wentz wasn't even the highest paid, I believe, on the team at that point. Like, yeah, it's just interesting looking down the line and seeing these teams that are winning Super Bowls not being paid. And then they usually get paid after they win the Super Bowl, such as Joe Flacco, Matthew Stafford. I mean, I don't know. They might repeat, but we don't know. But he was paid big time.
So it kind of shows. For me, the most interesting thing about that stat was that it kind of showed that you don't need to pay a quarterback 25% of the salary. And I thought that was the winning formula. And when I heard you say, hey, it's about the average is about 12% of the payroll for quarterbacks winning the Super Bowl on the team. I was like, what? Like, no way. I was like, that's insane. But you're right. When you go down and you look at it, they're kind of building that way. But anyway, we're going to get into sports a little more. I just want to introduce Brandon and some of his just deep analytical stat findings. But I know that one of the things that you've mentioned on the show, one of the things that interests me the most about you, Brandon Myers, is that, yeah, you're a man of God, and also, you know, Sean Adams is as well and whatnot, right? But you've spoken a little bit about, because I know that you guys are, you know, just do sports, but you still kind of compare sometimes some of the things, some of the happenings to your life and your experiences. So I know that one of the things that has interested me the most is to find out and to understand, also as a man of God, something that I have not done, but that I've heard you say on your pod that you have done, is that you grew up in the missionary life, right? Like, you grew up on the missionary field, right?
Yep.
So wanting to find out more about this, my question to you is, like, what are some of the things that, first of all, let's break this down. When did you first experience the missionary field? What is the life of a missionary? Mm-hmm. And what are some of the most exhilarating or great experiences that you've had on the missionary field?
Sure. So the first time I experienced the mission field, I'll start with my family. They are also still in, but an organization called Teen Missions International. It's down in Florida. It's in Merritt Island. It's literally like 5 minutes from NASA Space Center. So what they do is they take teenagers overseas every year, do mission trips. They go in there with no phone, no electronics, nothing like that. They're sleeping in tents, doing washing their clothes in a bucket, things like getting them prepared for life. Like, if you're going, like, you get to choose what team you want to go on. So if they chose to go to a team in Africa, you're not going to have much running water. You're not going to have, like, you're sleeping in tents. You don't have, like, these nice hotels. So they're prepping you for harsher, the environments potentially. So they're getting you ready for that, which is, it's not easy, but it's really, I mean, it's challenging, and I mean, it's great as well. So I experienced first, when I was three. I went as with my parents, because there's no way they're not gonna send a three-year-old overseas by themselves. But I was with my family. It was myself, my mom, and my sister at the time. We went to Egypt.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, that was the first. One of the things I can remember is climbing. We were able to climb a pyramid. Now, obviously, you can't climb all the way to the top, but we like got the second to third row, and I remember that. So that was really cool. We would go every other summer. So my family would stay on the base and kind of like be there just in case families call and like, hey, how are my kids doing? Like, can you help us? Because there's you're also sending your kid out on a team. So parents want to know how their kids are doing. So it's good to have somebody there to calm parents down if needed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so every other summer we went on teams. So I've been to Kenya, Iceland, Faroe Islands, Australia, Thailand, Ethiopia, a bunch of places. So yeah, it's just been an exciting experience every time. So there are teams where you do work projects, there's teams where you do evangelism, sometimes you do both. yeah, it's just been, it was such a great experience seeing, like, if you just feel blessed. That's one of the main things that I took away is, like, when you go overseas and you see kids playing with literally a can or a stick, and they have their creative minds and do, like, put things together, and you're just, like, you're there, and you're like, you just feel bad for the kids, you know, because that's all they have, but they are so happy, and they're making the best out of their what they have, and then coming back, you just literally in America, you pretty much have everything, like how you're living, you have a roof over your head, you're running water, clean water, food on your on your plate all the time. That's you just come back feeling completely blessed and wanting to get back even more. But so that's one of the biggest things I took away from the mission field, and yeah, it's just be thankful and for what you have.
Is there like one thing that pops out to you more than others when you're like, man, I remember this day, or like an experience?
While we were in Thailand, we did we built a security wall for kids. We were at an orphanage. That was super fun. Like, we stayed on the orphanage campus and we played with the kids every night. But we worked during the day and played with kids, like, really interacted with them. There was one point where they had a concrete truck come in to give us cement to pour, to get ready to stack the brick. Well, it was pouring rain, and the truck ended up getting stuck. And we're just sitting there, like, just hauling buckets of cement because he couldn't get back to where we needed it. So as a team, we were kind of just making an assembly line, and we got all the cement out, and then it was time for the truck to leave. Well, he was stuck and couldn't leave, so we're all, like, pushing it, trying to get it out, and then coming out. So my dad comes, and he was a leader at that point, and he said, so did we stop and pray? Like, did we ask God to give us strength to move this? And of course, at that point, we're all like, no, like, this is the first thing you should do. This equation, just ask God for strength. So we all stopped, we prayed, and the very next time I pushed it, and it got right out. So
awesome.
Like, just that moment, you're just like, so that's another good lesson that, like, my dad and just, like, sitting down, like, just pray, how powerful prayer is. Absolutely. And just praying, like, that was a big thing, like, moving a truck, but, like, even in the little things, like, it was okay if the truck got stuck and stood there or was there, but, like, it was just a moment of God saying, hey, look what I can do, you know? It's just, it was super powerful. So we're all like, and, you know, walking away like, why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, no, yeah. So easy. That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like,
I was like, that's so, anyway.
Yeah, when you're in a situation and, you know, people who are, you know, more experienced in you know, in the relationship with the Lord, right?
Oh, for sure.
They stop and they tell you, like, the most fundamental thing. You know, you're like, you know, something happens, you know, oh, I got to come up with this money, you know, or something, we had to go to the hospital with my kid, or just something, right? Something where you're like, I'm going a million miles an hour in my head and I'm trying to think of every scenario. And then the more seasoned vet will did you pray? And then you're like, oh, dope. Like, you know, like, well, that's right. Yeah. Like, hello. And then after the whole situation, after you prayed and it works out like it did for you guys, you're like, man, like, why didn't I go? You know, that's
it's the human nature of wanting to do it ourselves.
Right.
Absolutely. And think we can do it ourselves. And you just,
that's happened so many times to so many people. But that's the great thing about having people with wisdom near us and with us. It's like, they're going to let us know, hey, this is what you do first, you know, and then that experience teaches us. And I'm sure that right now, you know, there are a lot of times where you just go, all right, hold on. I'm not going to handle this myself. First, I'm going to go into the prayer and then I'm gonna like, you know, so I'm sure that that was definitely an experience that helped you in your spiritual life, because obviously, like, it's something that sticks out to you.
Yeah, and in the middle of praying, like, and then like the Holy Spirit can give you answers and stuff, like just taking time, stopping, like, all right, God, what, like, help me, you know?
Yep.
And he just wants us to come to him, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing when you see the wisdom that God will give you when all of a sudden when you're praying and the Holy Spirit, he's like, this is what you should do. This is the way you should go. This is the road you should travel, right? And you're like, man, I didn't think of that. Well, obviously you didn't think of that. Like, we're finite, you know? And it's like, and then all of a sudden you feel like this enlightenment and you feel this like great light just hit, like the bulb goes on, right? Like in the cartoons, when the bulb goes on and you have a good idea. Like, yeah, man, like, you know, he is infinite, right? He's all knowing. So, you know, there's definitely been a lot of times where I could say myself too, like, why didn't you pray first, man? You know, so you come to that realization, and then, but that helps you to be better. You know, that helps you to grow, because then the next time you pray and then you show your kids, hey, this is the way we should do it. So, you know, shout out to Papa Myers, who the seasoned vet, who was like, hey, did you guys pray first, right? And I'm sure everybody kind of felt a little crunchy, like, man, you know, like,
why didn't I think of that?
Exactly. I'm a man of God. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah. So that's cool, exactly, man. But wow, the amount of countries you've been to, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's just awesome.
And it's not including, like, my wife and I, we went, well, at that point, we weren't married. Okay. But we did YWAM together, and we went to Greece, Poland, and Germany.
So what is YWAM? What is YWAM?
So it's Youth with a Mission.
Okay.
It's where they take, it's like a two-month schooling, like discipleship training. And then you pretty much go overseas, or that's for 3 months, sorry. And then the next 2 months, you go overseas and kind of use what you learn to impact the world.
So you met your wife, Brooke, on the mission field?
So we both actually met in Orlando, because that's where YWAM, our YWAM, there's a bunch of YWAMs all over the world, but our YWAM base was in Orlando. So we both met in Orlando, and then we were on the same sports and fitness track. Okay. So we pretty much did everything together. So there was like 12 of us. So basically we saw each other in every situation all the time. And then when we went overseas, we were like in a very, very small apartment. So you saw everything and all things of each other. So it was really cool. Like, and then we got engaged and married really quick.
So you said sports and fitness.
Yep.
So what was her sport of choice?
So it was more going, so sports and fitness, going there, pretty much how you can get your body right and how you can use sports to impact others. So basically we went there learning the different sports, learning the different tactics, such as, I mean, soccer is a huge sport overseas. Mm-hmm. So learning soccer, volleyball, huge sport overseas, and basketball. So those were the three main sports that kind of like, we learn fundamentals, different things like that, of how to play, so that if we were to, when we go over and use them, we know how to play. And because sports, it's a universal language.
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Such as NBA. There's so many people from overseas coming into the NBA, and like, I don't know how many of them can actually speak really good English, but you can all speak basketball and play. Yeah. So that's one way of like impacting. So we actually, we played soccer with some refugees in Greece. And so they invited us over after we were getting ready to leave, like actually head home to back to Florida. And they invited us to their camp, which at that point is unheard of, because we were Americans. Lots of stuff wasn't going well with, they didn't trust Americans, but they wanted us to come because we connected so well with them in soccer. So that right there is an in. Like, how you can use sports as an in to get to people and reach them.
Man, sports is so powerful. Wow.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That's cool.
One more question about the missionary life.
Sure.
All the countries you've been to outside of the U.S., what was one monument or place or tourist spot that took your breath away?
Oh, let's see.
I know you climb pyramids.
But... yeah. we went to London, seeing Big Ben, the Big Ben Tower or the clock, and then we saw like the changing of the guards.
Yeah.
Whenever they did that in London, that was pretty cool. That was pretty crazy.
Cool.
So.
Well. Sports fan, you're like, when you say Big Ben, I think Ben Roethlisberger number 7.
Yep. But, as soon as I said it.
Yeah, as soon as you said it. But, you know, when you think about history class, obviously that's what you're going to think about. But, man,
yep.
That's really cool, man. That is just, I think, one of the highlights, one of the secondary parts of missionary life is that you get to see, you know, culture, touristic spots and all that, because obviously you're gonna have a break, you know, from doing all the mission that you're doing, and you know you're gonna have a little time to take some pics or, you know, just
sightsee,
take everything in. Where I know I said one more question, but this one just popped into my head.
Yep.
Outside of the U.S., where was the best food?
So I very much enjoyed Asian food, Asian food. So like we went to go into Thailand. Thailand had, like, I'm a huge rice. I like rice and chicken. Like they had mean rice and chicken. That's some good stuff. But the craziest thing that we actually ate, we had two crazy things. In Australia, we had kangaroo stew.
What?
Yeah, we had kangaroo meat. We were with some indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And they made us a meal, and there was kangaroo in it.
How good is kangaroo?
Oh, it was awesome. It tastes like beef. It's really? Like a beef-ish
wow.
taste. Very chewy. I like chewy meat. I'm a yeah. chewy, like you have to chew your meat like 5 times.
Right.
And then we went to Iceland, and their customs are to have whale meat. So whale meat.
Whoa. Okay.
Whale blubber. And dried fish. All of those were gross. So I would not recommend any of those. Yep.
No whale, no dried fish, none of that.
Nope.
But kangaroo, A-okay.
Kangaroos, yes. If you have an opportunity to have kangaroo, I would recommend it.
Nice. Okay. The missionary life is not for everybody though, right?
No, it's not. No, like, but obviously you can be a missionary wherever. You can be a missionary, like being called on the mission field overseas.
Yeah.
Mission field's right in front of you.
Right.
You can support missions, like if you feel like you're supposed to be the supporter.
Absolutely.
Like, that's how my parents lived. Like, off support for people, like, for 25, 30 plus years, like, as a couple, they've lived off support. So, they can't do it without people that support them. So, if you feel called to support people, please go support them.
Amen. Definitely, man. That is awesome, man.
Yeah.
The missionary field intrigues me, even though I'm not called to it per se in that respect, as in flying and climbing pyramids and eating kangaroo. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, you know, giving to the mission field is obviously very, very important. And it is something that continues to advance the kingdom of God, advance the church, because we bring some of the blessings that we have from here, you know, not only spiritually, but also material blessings that we have, made them available over there. Obviously, Bibles and things of that nature. There's still a lot of dialects that don't have the word. So when we pour into the mission field, that also goes to, you know, at times, you know, translating Bibles. And that is very, very important, because I know that there's a lot of places and remote places that they don't have Bibles yet. Like, they heard of Jesus and they hear it through translation when people are preaching, but they can't sit down with their Bible every day the way that we do. and be like, okay, I am going to dig into the scriptures, because they don't have that available yet. So people don't think that there's a lot of work to be done. There is still a ton of work to be done in the mission field. And I know that the Myers family is just a part of that. And that's what's up, man. I really love that. I really love hearing about the missionary life and experiences, man. But I also know that we got some other stuff we want to get into, some sports. I told everybody, like, we're going to get back to it. So the first question I want to ask you as we move into sports is the big news right now. What are your thoughts on the entire Nets situation? And what are your thoughts on KD asking for a trade? And lastly, where do you think he should go? I'm not asking you to predict where he's going to go. Where do you think he should go?
The Nets are in shambles. So I saw this. There was a thing that came up on my feed that once Ben Simmons got traded to the Nets, remember him saying, this is going to be scary? Mm. Yeah, it didn't happen at all. So he's the main guy now. Because I'd kind of be surprised if Kyrie stays. But this whole Kevin Durant thing is pretty much the whole offseason is going to be nuts. I mean, it feels like it's already nuts with Rudy Gobert being traded. But with Kevin Durant, he is just such a huge player and coming off the ACL, he's still Kevin Durant. Like, it doesn't look like he's really let up. So it's going to be fun. I can't tell you. Apparently they messed him up pretty hard to want to leave, because this is only his second year, or he's been there for 2 years, maybe.
Well, he was 3 years, but he only played two because of the first season, right? He was out. Yep.
Yeah. So like, feels like a quick turnaround for him to want to be traded. So, something just didn't go right there. I don't really know if it's ever really gone right in Brooklyn, because I mean, looking back to that, the
Paul Pierce. No. Yeah.
Yep. That didn't go well. So something's going on in the front office there. But I think the place where I think he should go, personally, I think I would love to see him with Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Now I don't know if it'll be in Portland or where else, because I hear that I don't know how happy he is in Portland, but I think it'd be fun to see him with Damian. But the best place for him to be would probably be Golden State. And obviously, he's not going to go back there. I mean, if he actually wants to win more championships, that's where he can go. But I know they mentioned his preferred a place to go are the Suns. Mm-hmm. There's no way that he can. I mean, I'm pretty sure he wants to play with Devin Booker, but they already said that there's no way that there's not going to be a trade with Kevin Durant unless Devin Booker's in that trade.
I mean, so Devin Booker just got his money, 4 years at $224. So I mean, I'm sure the money matches.
Yeah.
But do the Suns want to give up Devin Booker?
No. I think he's too young. I mean, he's a very young player, and I still think he can get better as a player.
Mm-hmm.
I still think they were one of the best teams. I mean, they were one of the best teams this year. They just fell apart in Game 7.
So if you're the GM, are you doing that deal? Are you saying, KD can bring me a championship, maybe two, if we have the right pieces? Is that enticing enough, even one championship? Is that enticing enough for you to say, all right, I'll let go of Devin Booker?
I mean,
I think so too.
If I know I'm going to get a championship, like, then, I mean, yeah, I would do that trade. But I think the interesting thing is, like, Kevin Durant has not won without Golden State.
Right.
Like he's a great player, but he hasn't won a championship without like Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. So it's
funny.
I'm not saying he can.
It's funny because I saw a stat the other day that they were comparing James Harden and Kevin Durant, right? And they were saying, just take out Golden State and look at the numbers and look at what they've done. Yeah. Same kind of MVPs, almost the same kind of points per game, all NBAs, all that stuff. And it looked almost identical. So when you so when you bring that up, I'm kind of like, I get where you're coming from. Because you're saying, like, without this super stacked team, can Kevin Durant win? You know, but then I look at the Suns and I go, man, but he'll have a pass first point guard for the first time in his career. Steph Curry's not pass first. Kyrie Irving's not pass first. And we all know Russell Westbrook wasn't pass first. You know, so that's why I'm saying to myself, like, I think maybe that dynamic could work. And they still got to, they do have to work out that DeAndre Ayton deal. So that still has to get done. Yeah. But let me run this by you, right, with the KD thing. Going to Portland, okay? I'm talking about going to Portland. Jokic just got his money. Anthony Simmons just got his money. I don't know if Anthony could play with Ben Simmons. I'm not sure about that. Because I know that there's a couple of players that can't play with Simmons via trade because of something in the CBA. So I'm not sure if Portland is one of those teams that can't trade a player to Brooklyn because of Ben Simmons, something in his contract like that. So yeah, that's just something weird in the CBA right now with him. But let's just say, like, you know, just throw out the CBA rules for a minute, fantasy land for a minute, right? I like that deal where he goes to Portland. Obviously, most likely you're gonna have to let go of Simmons or, what you know, Anthony Simmons, because he, you know, money matching and things like that. Right. They just got Gary Payton the second, right? 3 years of 28. But pair him up with, you're talking about him, Jokic, and Lillard. But then let's look at him and Luka. I like Dallas better, because I think you got a top five player in the league. And then you got two top five players if Durant comes in. So I know that, you know, playing with Lillard sounds great and all that, and Portland is starving for a championship and the fans will totally be behind it and whatnot. But I love the fit more than anywhere, even more than the Heat and the culture that they have, Pat Riley, Jimmy Buckets, and everybody like that. I just like the fact that if you could hook up two top five players in the league, they'd be good to go. That's my opinion. I don't know whether you like the Heat better, the Mavs better, or Portland better. Like, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, and the bottom line is, who's going to give the best package?
Right.
That's honestly, like, I guess even thinking about Portland, what can Portland really give up? Like, for, I mean, you said the center.
Jokic. Yeah.
My guess is he's going to be in that trade.
Okay.
He would, like, if they did that trade. Or, like, Dallas. I didn't really know many Dallas players this season.
Yeah.
Like, you have Luka, and then you had Jalen Brunson, but he's going to New York.
Yep.
So, like, where would that go? And then...
Which of the three teams you think has the best shot to win the championship if KD lands there? The teams we just talked about. Miami, Dallas, and Portland.
I think it's either Miami or Dallas.
All right. Okay. I mean, Coach Spo, Kevin Durant, and Jimmy Buckets. come on, man. That's awesome.
And the East is weak, so.
Absolutely. I just think about him and Luka Doncic together, and it's like, wow. But then, like you just said, the East is weak. So,
yep.
Maybe. The Heat were one of the teams on the list, right? It was the Suns and the Heat, right?
I didn't see the Heat, but that would be cool.
Okay, I might be mistaken. We know that the Suns are one. I don't remember if the Heat were the other team. What do you think about the Rudy Gobert trade? Four picks for Rudy Gobert, bro? Really?
No. Four picks for Rudy Gobert and a bunch of players.
Yeah, Malik Beasley, Pat Bev, Walker Kessler, who's just a draft pick, Jared Vanderbilt, and Leandro Bolmaro.
Yeah.
So it's about
too much,
nine.
Way too much for that guy.
You think that the T-Wolves... You think that putting Cat at the four is going to help the T-Wolves this season? Because he's a pretty good three-point shooter. And he's not going to have to be banging down low now.
Yeah, that's true. It does spread the floor also for Rudy Gobert. But like if he's down low. But yeah, I think it could. I think it could potentially work. I don't think they're going to make it to the championship.
Okay. All right. So here's the move I like the most. The move that I like the most out of the entire, you know, the time that free agency is, you know, been like right now, obviously, I like Brogdon going to the Celtics more than any other move, you know, more than the Brunson move and more than the DeJounte Murray going down to Atlanta and stuff like that, and pairing him with, Trae Young. And giving him a ball handler and a defender, all-world defender. But I like Brogdon the most, even though Murray's probably a better player, right? Because he's a two-way player. But I like Brogdon the most because Brogdon's going to come in at 6'5", give you some defense, but most importantly, give you some dang ball handling. They need ball handling. We saw the finals, man. We saw the finals. We saw the incredible amount of turnovers that Jason Tatum had, that this team had, and they broke down because of turnovers. So now, for me, I think that bringing in Brogdon and, you know, in theory, your thinking is he's going to calm down the turnovers a little bit. He's a little better decision maker and all that, you know, so that's what they were missing, I think, to me the most, was a guy who's not going to make boneheaded plays. So with him coming over, I think that their chances are better this upcoming season to win the championship than last season. Would you agree with that or disagree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they've gotten stronger. They didn't really lose anybody, but they've gained. So.
And the thing is that Gallinari wants to sign. So Gallinari might come in and he might just be a guy coming off the bench, pun intended, right? You know, deep somewhere, 10th, 11th guy, just coming in and shoot threes every once in a while. Yeah. So they've gotten much better. That's been my favorite move of the NBA offseason. What's your favorite move so far? Is that your favorite move or you have another one? You got something else?
There's nothing that really is standing out. There's more... like, what on earth were the Jazz thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, not the Jazz, the Timberwolves.
Okay.
Just the all the different, what thing people are giving up. So, to me, what I'm just most intrigued is what's going to be given up for Kevin Durant.
Okay, all right, got you.
That's what I'm more intrigued about.
I want to move on from the NBA because we got about 17 minutes to go here, right?
Sure.
I know that you're an avid Eagles fan, and you talk about that all the time on your pod. And I do want to get into the Eagles. But before we get into the Eagles, I know that you got something, right, up your sleeve. My favorite segment in the entire coming off the bench history, the 2 years that you guys have been out, almost three, right? Okay. So the almost 3 years... is Randall's with Brando. And I know that you're bringing it over. Now, I want to say this. Sean Adams, you can't sue me because this man is the co-host and he's bringing it over to our to my show. All right? So there's no infringement here. I'm talking to your co-host right now who I know is a real estate agent. So he's good with all this paperwork kind of stuff. But I got the co-host of Coming Off the Bench podcast and he's going to bring my favorite segment over to All Talks of Life with Chris Beniquez, but he's going to do it the sports edition. So I want to hear what you got when it comes to the most random things going on in sports or in history, whatever it is, man. Bring the heat, man.
All right. So I have five for you.
All right.
The first one is tug of war was an Olympic event in the 1900 to 1920.
Tug of war.
Yep. Number two, the average lifespan of an MLB baseball is 5 to 7 pitches.
Really? Yep. What? Wow. I did not know that. 5 to 7 pitches and you're out.
Through baseballs.
Holy cow. Okay.
Number three. The referee tossed a jump ball after every basket until 1937.
How many basketballs were they running through?
I don't know, but every time they would make a basket, everybody would come to the center of the and then do the toss up again, like the centers.
Oh, my bad. They're tossing a jump. Okay. Oh, my, sorry. I thought you meant like they were tossing them out. They're tossing a jump. They're after a basket. You got a jump ball.
Yep.
After every possession? Or after every made basket?
After every made basket.
Holy jeez. Okay. What kind of... Oh, that's like a 5-hour game, man. Yeah. That's horrible.
Games would never end.
Jeez. People will tune out ESPN really fast.
All right, number four. 2 days out of 365 days of your year featured no professional sports.
Ooh.
MLB, NBA, NHL, or NFL.
Oh.
Those days are before and after the All-Star break in the MLB.
Oh. The day before and the day after the All-Star. All right, because, right, the NFL, they haven't started preseason.
Uh-huh. Right.
The NBA is in its off season. The NHL just finished up. Oh snap! I did not realize that.
Yeah.
What are we doing during those 2 days? What?
Wishing for sports.
Oh Lord. So we survived 2 days out of the whole year without sports. Okay, cool. All right.
And then number five, Pittsburgh is the only American city with three sports teams that wear the same exact colors.
Oh, man. The Pittsburgh Pirates, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Oh, snap. I never thought of... Oh, dang,
black,
man.
Black and yellow and white.
Black, yellow, and white. I had never, ever thought of that. Geez, this is what I'm saying. Randos with Brando is like... Just bring to light some of the most nuanced... Minutia-filled things in sports history. I never thought of that. That's right, man. Dang, Pittsburgh, y'all need to pick it up. I'm not gonna lie, y'all need to change some colors, do something. Jeez, my goodness, man. But
all right, I got you some Steelers.
All right, cool. Let's do
it. They are one of only six NFL teams without a cheerleading squad.
Nice. Okay.
Rudy said they're distracting.
Yeah, I agree.
And so the Packers versus the Steelers Super Bowl in 2011 was the first Super Bowl without any cheerleaders.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay. But this is why it's Randall's or Brando. We didn't know any of this stuff.
Yeah. All right. And then I thought this one was really good. The franchise's first ever regular season touchdown was a defensive score.
Yeah, that's Steeler football, baby.
It was a 96-yard pick six in 1933.
Wow.
It was Martin Kotler, K-O-T-T-L-E-R.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. 96-yard score. You know what other team originated in 1933, don't you?
The Eagles?
Yes, sir. The Eagles
that
also.
Was just a guess.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, it should have been an easy one, I guess, because, you know, I'm gearing it towards you.
All right. And then, many people may know this, but in 1943, the Steelers and Eagles merged rosters.
Yep.
They were known as the Steagles.
Yep. That one, the only one that I knew out of all of them. That was the only one that I knew. Yeah. That's a horrible name.
It was World War II. They didn't have enough players.
Yep. Actually, on the people nicknamed them that, But on the actual scoreboard, when you're watching the TV, it said Philly STL. Like, you know, Philly and Steelers. So yeah. So when you're watching the broadcast, say Philly and PHI-STL.
Yeah.
But the people nicknamed them the Steagles. And I'm like, yep. That's just a terrible nickname. Oh, my God.
So then now I got two Eagle ones for you.
All right, cool.
All right, so the Eagles, they played the first televised game in the NFL.
Yep.
They lost to the Brooklyn Football Dodgers.
Oh, I thought it was the New York Giants. Okay, the Brooklyn Football Dodgers. What was the score?
I don't remember.
All right, cool. The first televised game ever, the NFL, was by the Eagles. Ever. Sweet. Yep. Nice. Okay.
And then Brian Dawkins, the only player in NFL history to record a sack, a fumble recovery, an interception, and a touchdown all in the same game.
Ooh, that's a game, bro.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yes, he's my favorite player.
That's your favorite Eagles player ever or favorite player?
Favorite player of all time.
Favorite player of all time, yeah. No, B-Dog, he was serious, man. I respected him. I really liked him, I'm not going to lie.
All right, I got some quick Yankee ones for you. Two Yankees.
Okay.
In their 115-year history, they only came in last four times.
Awesome. Yes. Yep. Come on, bring it.
And then July 1934, Babe Ruth hit his 700th home run. And he paid $20 for it.
Ooh, that was a lot back then.
I looked it up, equivalent to $436.
Nice. Okay, that's
compared to what, you know, what they gave the guy that took Tom Brady's final.
Yeah, air quotes around that final touchdown. They gave him some of the money back, I think, right? Or they gave him all the money back, I think. Something like that. Yeah, that was the right thing to do, huh?
That's it.
Oh, no. Awesome, man. Listen, I just found out something about my beloved Yankees. We only finished last four times in the history of, in our history. Wow. That is amazing. That is how you run a franchise. I love it, man. That's why that's Randall's with Brando, because he's going to let you know, he's going to let us know things that we were never, ever thought of. Pittsburgh, clean it up. New colors, man. Come on now. Somebody get something new. Brandon, as we wrapping it up, right, with about 7 minutes to go here, tell me about your beloved Eagles this season, your expectations. I know that you got them at 12 wins for the regular season, right? That's your projection. 12 wins, correct?
12 wins, yep.
Okay. But beyond the 12 wins, what are you expecting? And we're talking about the playoffs. Like, what is your thought on the end of the season?
The NFC Championship game.
You'd be happy.
I think they can make it. Okay. Again, they have a very favorable schedule, so I think they could do it. It's all on Jalen Hurts though.
Mm.
So
1 to 10. How much do you trust Jalen Hurts after what you saw last season?
Seeing what I saw last season,
because there was an improvement.
Five.
Even with AJ Brown coming in.
Well, you said after last season.
I'm sorry.
After last season.
Well,
but now I would say, I mean,
AJ Brown, solid, Dallas Goedert, Devontae Smith. Okay, so now that's the real question. How much do you trust him now?
7-8.
Eight is, that's high, man. Okay, eight is high.
Yeah.
But you know more than I do about the Eagles. How important is the run game with Jalen Hurts going to be this season?
Huge.
How important are his legs for this team?
Yeah, it's going to open up so many things for AJ Brown, Dallas Goedert. It's going to need to, because, I mean, with people thinking that he's going to run, he could run. He could pretended to run and go and throw the dink and dunks, excuse me. So I think it's going to be really good for his legs, and I think he's going to get probably 500 yards rushing.
Okay. Okay.
Another season in Nick Sirianni's.
What are your expectations for the defense this year? Because they can go nowhere but up. When it comes to the pass coverage, what are your expectations for N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis? And then the other additions that you guys had, do you think you guys are going to round out a little better, or you're going to have to wait?
Dude, I'm excited for N'Kobe Dean. That guy, I don't know why, he just, like, dropping to the third round just made me super ecstatic to see what he could do. We have, our linebackers can do everything better. Like, we were awful last year. So no matter who we put in, it's probably going to be better than what we had.
Absolutely.
And, like, getting James Bradbury next to Darius Slay is going to be great. And then Hassan Reddick. I keep forgetting that he's now on that team. Like, he's going to wreak havoc. And Philly loves sacks. So
right.
He's going to get those.
So official projection. NFC Championship game, Super Bowl appearance, Super Bowl win, second round exit. What's your projection?
At least getting to the second round.
No, what I'm saying is, where do you think they end? Where does the season end? From where you sit right now, where do you think the season ends?
Losing in an NFC Championship game. But okay. That's my prediction right now.
Okay. Okay. Cool, man. All right, we got a couple minutes here. You said you got a question or two for me, right? As we end out here. All right, cool. Go ahead.
All right, so as a Steelers fan,
yeah,
I said, Brian Dawkins is my favorite player. Your all-time favorite Steelers player is
the Bus,
and why?
Because the Bus, when I was about, I would say about 11 years old. Right, there was a game that came out. I have it actually for PlayStation 2. For PlayStation, NFL Game Day 98. He was the guy on the front cover, right? Yeah. So, you know, anybody who sees me knows, hey man, I'm a big dude, right? You could tell I like to eat. So I could tell Jerome Bettis like to eat, and the whole world could tell Jerome Bettis like to eat, but. You saw Jerome Bettis making moves that a big guy is not supposed to make on the field, running guys over, you know, with the speed that he had, you know, just stiff arm. And he was a really, really good back. He's a Hall of Fame back. And I was like, man, I never consumed football before the year 97, right? Like that was my first year watching football. And, you know, NFL Game Day 98 had came out and I started playing it and I saw the guy on the cover and I'm like, man, this guy looks similarly like me, body type, neck down. Like, we can play football? I was like, I didn't know this. Like, we can run the ball? And I'm playing the game and all that. And I'm like, this is my guy right here. Like, I like this dude, you know. And then obviously I started watching Barry Sanders. And I was like, oh, no, wait, that's the guy. Barry Sanders, the guy. But this guy right here has a semblance to me, and I'm like, I'm gonna watch this dude. And I was just impressed with the way that he ran people over at the speed that he ran people over. And then obviously I got into, you know, knowing the history of the team, the prestige of the team, the way the owners ran the organization, and Jerome Bettis was just my door into Steeler Nation. And then once I started, you know, going into understanding how the Steelers work, Steeler football and all that, I really became a fan. But Jerome Bettis is the guy that brought me into the door. Now, after Jerome Bettis, my favorite guy is Troy. You know, the dude with the flowing hair, he's going to hit you with his helmet. He's going to put you down. He's going to play that safety position. Obviously, he got hurt a lot because of the way that he played. But as a Steeler fan, I love the way that he played. I mean, it is Steeler smash mouth football. I mean, it's exciting.
The crazy one-handed catches.
Like, yes.
Interceptions that he gets.
Like, absolutely.
Jumping the snaps.
Like, yep. Jumping the snaps was my favorite thing that he did. So, you know, he was just incredible. Gave everything that he had all the time. Bettis always gave you everything that he had. Palomalu always gave you everything that he had. Roethlisberger always gave you everything that he had. So those are my three guys, 1, 2, and 3 in that order. Yeah, man. So I like I said on your pod, I think the Steelers are going 9-8 this year. I don't think Mike T is going to be on the losing end of a schedule, but we'll see. They have a pretty hard schedule though. So definitely, brother, this has been awesome. It has been fun. I really enjoyed Randall's with Brando, man. It was really, really cool. So I hope that you enjoy your fourth. I hope that you enjoy the barbecue and all that stuff. I hope that everybody enjoys their fourth. Continue to press forward. Don't give up. God has greater things for us. So I want everybody to enjoy their fourth. Do not blow off your fingers like JPP. Please be careful in what you do. Be careful with your children. Enjoy the 4th of July. This is All Talks of Life.